Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 582. Another wonderful journey going to the Ag Science Center in Clovis, which I happen to spend quite a bit of time in. I'll go ahead and tell you the subject of this thing because it came up and it's such a wonderful analogy. I just got to talk about it. It's called fasting or starvation. Now, let me give you some context as to where this comes from. Me and my wife, my wonderful wife Lisa, and I were, she was listening to my monologue, because it's not a dialogue, it's a monologue usually that I have with people. That's why I'm just made for radio, is because I have these, my life is one long living monologue. Anyway, so let me give you some background to this, because Lisa and I come from the same religious tradition when it comes to fasting, which is a Mormon Latter-day Saint, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints version of this. So you may need some background to understand where it's coming from. Mormons fast. Now, there is an established day of fasting every month. It's the first Sunday of every month, by and large, unless it falls on General Conference, and then it's usually shuttled off to a different Sunday. But it's typically always on Sunday. We go without food and water. The cost of that, plus more if you can afford it. Most people can, so they do. You give to the church is what's called a fast offering. Now you might think that that's it. And boy, isn't that a wonderful way to finance charity work? And I suppose that's one facet of it, and it's nice. What it is to a deeper level for a devout Latter-day Saint, which I'm trying to be. I think I may qualify in some people's book anyway. What it also is it's a time to put spiritual matters before temporal ones. And one of our biggest temporal matters is eating. You know, you put a spiritual thing, and you usually fast for a purpose. Often for someone who's sick or struggling or having trials. Around here, where I live, where we are very prone to droughts, we tend to fast for rain or precipitation quite often. You fast for something. It's usually something that's needed, not just by you, but by somebody else too. It's putting a spiritual thing or an outward thing before a selfish, inward type of thing. Not to all the things that we give up for selfish. You know, you need food. That's just a fact of life. But you don't need food constantly and at the level that we usually go at it. You know, we usually eat too much. Anyway, so that's the basic concept of it. Fasting ends up being a sacrifice in pursuit of something better. And it becomes almost a metaphor for a person's life. It can be, you know. You might not go for, you know, it goes along with the whole thing of don't put up treasures here on earth, put them up in heaven. Fasting is a facet of that and a metaphor for it. It's actually a physical and somewhat of a spiritual manifestation of doing that. You know, you're not so worried about the temporal things, about the things of today. You're more concerned about the spiritual things or the things of tomorrow in the afterlife. I think that's a pretty good, just basic explanation of how Latter-day Saints feel about fasting or how they should feel or how devout and how I feel about it. Okay, let's just leave it at that. Okay, so Lisa and I were talking this morning, ad nauseum as usual. Lisa wearies of the constant talk that I have about things like yurts and one of our current issues is moving out of Tucumcari. And I'll say for the most part that in the past this has been for selfish reasons. I've always liked living out in the country. I enjoyed it as a child, and every time I get a chance to get away from the hustle and the bustle and the concerns of everyday living, at least to a bit, it feels better. I feel better. So, you know, I'm going, well, I want to continue to have these feelings. Now, these aren't bad, but, you know, it's not a sacrifice on my part. I would be asking other people to sacrifice. It would be a great blessing, I would think, I would hope, for me. So, you know, it's always been looked at that way. And Lisa's always, of course, taken the thing that it would be a great sacrifice for her. And she would basically be giving up what little happiness she has now, which isn't very much, honestly. Well, with her present living and reality circumstances, she feels like that in giving that up, she's going to lose something. And that living out in the country is going to just be a big trial for her. So I think that's what the conversation's always been about. Jay wants this, Lisa resists, because, you know, she thinks that what she has now is preferable to what she'll have there. So she resists it. Honest response, I'm not saying it's bad. It's simply a conflict between what I want and what she wants. It's simple. We've tended to compromise over the years, and we've both given up some things. We've both gotten a little bit of stuff, and it seems to work. That's typical, and that's okay. I mean, it's not optimal, but very few times are you going to get optimal. Okay. Given that circumstance, a couple of days ago, when I was thinking about this stuff, I came up with what I call a tipper. You know, everything tends to get weighed on scales. You know, what are the pros? What are the cons? If the pros outweigh the cons, you tend to do it. If the cons outweigh the pros, you tend not to. And so you sit there and you analyze it and you make a decision, and that decision stands. Well, I got something that is a tipper. It tends to tip the thing pretty strongly in one direction. We have been looking at making some changes for other reasons. The first reason we were thinking about moving to House, New Mexico, which is actually a town. People get confused because it's called House, and that doesn't make a lot of sense for the simple reason that that's what you call a building. It's not what you call a town, a village. This place is a village. It's only got like 270 people at best. I think that was a pretty high estimate. I think it's probably somewhat less than that. Anyway, getting out close to House. One of the reasons was because Lisa makes a trip there every single week with school. Oh, incidentally, Shane has graduated from high school. Woohoo! She did it! And that means more because she did the work. It wasn't like she sat in school for 12 years and now she's with everybody else who sat through 12 years of school graduating. It isn't like that. She actually physically had to work. We didn't help her. There weren't a gaggle of teachers that were cracking the whip over her head constantly. She did it. So it makes it so much bigger of a thing. Anyway, she graduated. So, woohoo! The interesting thing is, now they've changed rules. Brenna's going to go here in probably about a month, and she's going to go test to see if she's at the level to start high school a semester early. just like Shayna graduated from high school a semester earlier than anticipated. So, and that's great. So anyway, so, you know, our whole thing of going up to house once a week continues for another, you know, for the foreseeable future. If Josh decides to do this same thing, he'll go to school for many years, you know. And if he wants to go to house, alternative school, he'll go there. And so we'll be making this trip pretty much for the next several years. So I was starting, you know, when I was thinking of good places to go if we were going to leave Tucumcari, I thought about house, because it makes sense, you know. And that's been one of our criteria. When I've brought up buying inexpensive pieces of land, I have looked at and talked about pieces that were, you know, that were pretty far from town, and that was usually always the killer. I have a kind of job where it doesn't really matter where I live, you know, as long as it's within my territory and within a decent distance to some office of New Mexico State University, because, you know, if I can at least justify something. I can at least do storage there or something. What am I trying to say? So, always that clincher was, we want our kids to be able to go to the house alternative school, so we didn't want to get very far from that. Tucumcari is only about 45 minutes, maybe 50 minutes away from it. Approximately 45 miles. So, I said, well, if that's becoming the big criteria, is not getting too far from house, why don't we just get in closer to house? So we started toying with that. Now, people always say, oh, Jay wants to do a yurt, Jay wants to do rammed earth, Jay wants to do this, Jay wants to do that. And you go, well, there's a deeper thing I'm trying to accomplish. And if a yurt doesn't do it, I'll throw it aside just as readily as I threw aside rammed earth building, adobe, you know. If there's going to be too many problems, I'm not going to have the energy to get it done. And I know that both Lisa and I have finite amounts of energy that we want to put toward anything. And you have to understand that. So you don't take on huge things that you can't finish. There's a parable in the Bible about don't start a tower. You know, people don't start building a tower if they haven't considered all the cost and handled the cost of it. Now, that's universally a parable that gets ignored these days because you're not doing that. But anyway, so you tend to consider the cost, both the cost not just in money but in energy. And I know that I'm not a very energetic person, honestly. I have been considered lazy at times. You know, that's fine. You can call me lazy, and you're probably right. I said, I'm also a kind of person that I try to study everything out, and that can look at like lazy. Well, let's just do it. You know, it has to be done, do it. I said, no, I'm going to study it out and see if there's any possible alternative way I can make this happen, you know, and that looks like lazy. I'm not going to say that's my only fault, you know, in laziness path. I could be the worst too. Anyway, so we were looking for places, so we started kind of poking around in the house, and I always know it's a better plan because Lisa actually has participated in the last few weeks in saying, well, this could happen. She's, you know, it's starting to look like a possibility. Well, the tipper that happened was on our twins. Like I said, Lisa and I are not very energetic people. My twins are not our children, I swear, because they are so energetic. They're bouncing off the walls. They're what's called cuspy ADHD, which means they probably would get the diagnosis, but the people who are doing it don't like giving that diagnosis unless it's really just horrible and unmanageable. So I guess you would call it a manageable form of ADHD. It isn't like they're going to kill themselves or they can't function. It's just that school is going to struggle with them. And I personally don't care. You know, they get paid a lot of money. They should be able to deal with it. I know it's uncomfortable and it's not pleasant, but that's life. You know, you're getting paid to do this role. If you don't like the role, go do another job. That's my attitude about it. Surely there's somebody who's willing to do this job for this amount of money and take care of these kind of problems. If they're not, we need to rethink the whole thing. But so far, society works that way, and that's the way it is. Okay. So this all looks really good. House is becoming a possibility. At least the area around house. The whole general place. Mostly within the realm of the house school district. There are several things to be required there. Okay, so that became the tipper, was these twins. Lisa isn't going to have the energy to homeschool these guys like we have our other children. Shana gave mom fits. Brenna hasn't. Brenna's just fine with the kind of thing that she's got right now. Josh, in the past, has given Lisa fits over this stuff. And so there's that. But Lisa's all constantly been saying, no, I'm not going to homeschool those twins. Never, 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 never. They drive me nuts. And it's like, okay, you know, you could fight and say, no, it's a better thing. But you have to understand there's a whole other thing that Lisa and I have become real devoted to right now, which is people before programs. And we're not going to say, well, we do homeschooling, and therefore you're going to have to just do homeschooling whether it hurts you or not. Whether you can handle it or not, we're going to do it. That's what we're currently facing in our branch of the LDS Church, is the fact that we've got a lot of people that are very program-based, and to hell with the people, we have to keep up the program. That's what the church is all about, the program, you know, which, is, of course, the brethren, the leaders of the church have definitely said that's not the right attitude. It definitely is people before programs. But it's hard to get people to do that. Now, I'm not blaming anybody, because it's a hard concept to grab, and it's a hard concept to live, especially when your whole life has been about programs. So I don't blame a soul, but, you know, I'm not going to go there, and you're not going to twist my arm to make me. Because I've come up to a different country, more in line with what, you know, leadership says, so I'm not going to do that. So I'm putting people before programs of homeschooling, too. You know, the needs of Lisa and Sam and Caleb are going to be higher than this whole beautiful theory of, well, we're going to do homeschooling because homeschooling's better. And you go, well, yes, by and large, it is. But in this circumstance, I think it's a bad idea. So we're not going to do it. So I need to find some place to put my kids. Tucumcari Carey Middle School is a war zone. It's hell. It is a cesspool. And I don't tend to send my kids there. You know, our option has always been in the past to homeschool them, especially at that point. You know, about fifth grade is when it ends. Here, middle school starts at sixth grade. So Josh is in, what grade? Josh is in fifth grade. Our plan is that Josh will be homeschooled next year. Sometimes we've been thinking about Josh being homeschooled this coming semester, but I don't know what happened there. I think it was just an idea, and I don't know if it ever went anywhere. Anyway, so, And it might not be the best thing for Josh either, although Josh wants to do it because his other sisters did it and they liked it. And, you know, I don't, you know, and Lisa's kind of going, well, I don't want to do that because the twins are going to give me all kinds of crap for it. And it's always, I'm not going to let that kind of stuff steer it. It may be consideration, but it's not going to steer it. You know, I'm not going to have him going to school and suffering just so the twins don't feel bad. I think that's silly. You know, why should he suffer because of that? Especially when he doesn't want to. And that brings us right back to the big thing. You know, fasting versus starving. Anyway, so, but before I get back to fasting versus starving, just know that that's another great thing where that concept fits in. And we'll talk a little bit more about the concept and where it's fitting in. That's one circumstance. Josh shouldn't have to stay in school unless he's willing to make that sacrifice to help his brothers. And I'm certainly not going to try to put any pressure on him to do that, because there's a difference between fasting, which is sacrificing for a greater purpose and being blessed for it, and starving, which is just putting yourself through torture and pain, typically for no good reason at all. And I'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, so house was another good thing there. Smaller schools tend to do better with these kind of kids, and they don't tend to have the problem kids. Some of the schools around Tucumcari County have gotten problem kids, and they've gotten real skittish about taking problem children. And so, you know, have to sweeten the pot a bit. Well, you know, and they don't do that. House is far enough away that it usually doesn't get that. You know, they were doing it, and they found out that they used to actually have a shuttle bus that would be driven by somebody who wanted to take their kids to House, and they found out that most of the kids going from Tucumcari to House on that shuttle bus were the ones with huge problems. And they just weren't going to be able to pull it off. Now, I'm just thinking, I was thinking just a few minutes ago before I even started this podcast that I was going to, I wanted to compose some sort of a letter to try to elicit some help getting a piece of property out there that we could build on, or just live on, you know. However that ended up going, that was how we were gonna do it. Anyway, so I was saying, how can I help allay their fears? And I know one of their big fears is they don't want problem kids. And I know Joshua is, you know, his teachers want to clone him, you know, because he's such a wonderful kid and they love him. Brenna was also like that too. You know, of course they're going to get her for other, you know, at the alternative school. She's going to go to the alternative school whether or not. You know, she may choose to go to the regular school. Once she's there, that's fine. I don't foresee a big problem there. Anyway, so that was one of the big reasons why we were doing all this. That's where all this comes from. And I was going to write this letter to try to get some help finding that piece of land. And it's a real question. Do I really want to do this, or does it become a big problem? And I want them to know that I'm cognizant of this, and that that we're going to try not to be a problem for them. Anyway, so. There's the whole lead up to this thing. I feel like I've done this whole build up to try to get to this point. Okay, so we were looking at all that. The big tipper was the twins. You know, we weren't going to be able to homeschool the twins. They were going to have to go to probably through the entire range of regular school. House, the whole idea of saying, well, maybe we should go to house so they can go to house schools was a big thing because we said, wait, house is going to be better because it's not a war zone. And we wouldn't be just homeschooling our kids to get them away from house from Tewksbury Middle School. It wouldn't be a consideration anymore. And that was going to be good. That was going to be good. Okay, so I did. So, I'm sorry, guy. We were talking about some of these issues this morning, and you need all this background so you can get to where we were talking about fasting versus starving. Let me give you the basic concept of the difference between those two. I talked a little bit about fasting. Now I'm going to talk about starving and how it relates to fasting. Because a lot of people look at it that way. Why would you want to starve yourself for two meals? What point does that serve? And so people explain, you know, this is what fasting is. This is what fasting does. This is what it does for me. This is what it does for other people. And I already talked about that. Now let's talk about the whole concept of starving, because you can actually go through all the motions of doing what would constitute a fast, including paying some money into the fast offering fund. You can do all that, but yet not get what fasting is really there for, which is to bless your life, to make you a better person, to make you the kind of person that looks at other people before yourself. Makes you the kind of person that looks at spiritual things, a reward in heaven, rather than a reward on earth that you know, moth can destroy and rust can corrupt. I'm paraphrasing wildly, but I think you know what I'm talking about if you're any student of the scriptures at all. It works you toward those things, but when you don't do it with the right attitude, when you look at it as simply, I'm sitting here and I'm hungry and I wish I could eat, but I'm not, but I can't, because there's a rule that says I can't, you lose the whole thing. You know, it really loses its purpose. I mean, you can still physically do it, and you can tell people, yes, I fast every single month like I'm supposed to. You can say that, but it's not netting you any of those other things. You have a reduction in potential blessings and potential growth because you don't do it with the right attitude. And that's where this thing comes from, this whole fast versus starvation. It's the attitude. Did I accept this? Did I want to do this? You know, is it happening? Lisa and I have been struggling with Lisa's calling at church. At church, jobs that need to be done are called callings. And they're often done along those lines, you know. It's prayed about, and you try to get an impression as to whether this is something the Lord finds acceptable. And if you do, you're given a calling. Now, it's not calling to the depth of, I felt a calling to go into the ministry, like some people do. Mostly not LDS people, because we don't look at it that way particularly. A calling's a smaller thing. It's basically, we prayed about, we think it's a good idea, we think you're the right person to do it right now, and things like that. And we've checked with God, and God has either has given us a good feeling, or didn't say, no. Okay, that's where the calling comes from. Anyway, she has a calling as the young women's president. Now, it goes all into the size thing. I think I've talked about this a little bit before. Maybe I'm quasi-indefatigable gentleness. Maybe on this one. The LDS Church, any organization runs best at a certain size, and it usually tends toward a pretty good-sized group. We don't have that size of a group, especially for young women. We've got basically 2.5 girls that are even vaguely interested in getting together like on Wednesday and having fun together. That's what it's supposed to be. If you had a group of 12 or 13 or 14 kids, it would work so much better, because then those kids can do a whole lot of the work themselves. Let's get together, let's do some fun things. Because with a group that large, you'll tend to have a planner, you'll tend to have the natural leader, you'll tend to have all these different things, and it tends to attract more people, you know? It's of a big enough size and energy and intensity that it's attractive. When you only have 2 or 3 girls, it doesn't have any of that. In our circumstance, you know, 2 of them are my daughters, and they take after me, so they're somewhat non-social. You know, so going on those Wednesday night times when you're supposed to have fun, it's usually kind of a trial for them. The other girl, she lives far away. She doesn't get to come very often. Hang on, I've got a problem here. I've got too much ice on my thing. Let me pause this for a second. Hang on. I had to knock the ice off of the antenna. It was shaking because it was getting too top heavy. That's what happens. It's cold enough here that things freeze when it's going fast. It's foggy and misty out here, but it's not, you know, it's kind of depressing because it's not generating any water, you know, it's not raining. We should wish it rain. I wish it would snow. I wish it would do something. But it's just this cold, kind of oppressive haze. And it makes things just kind of miserable. Anyway, so, let's think about some. Okay, let's get back to what I was talking about. Okay, size is always a problem. It makes it so that the job Lisa's had for a long time, and she's tired, she's burned out. You know, and it turns it from, now, everybody's calling is supposed to be somewhat of a blessing. Now, you have to understand, I said, nobody's saying it shouldn't be a sacrifice. That's why it's a fast versus starving sort of a thing. The fact that you're sacrificing is implied in both. You're going to be sacrificing. The question is, what are you sacrificing for? And that helps. And that kind of determines whether you're willing to do something or not over a long period. A lot of us can suffer for short periods without it really being a big problem. Over long periods, it becomes a problem. So, that's what came up. That's one example of what's coming up. I think Lisa, who in the past has been, has her sacrifice that she's been doing for young women has worked, I think it's become more starvation than it is fasting. She's just going through the motions. She sees no real reason to do so except to say it's being done, and that's not a good enough reason for her. And I understand completely, because it wouldn't be for me either. I got out of my young men's job, basically on a technicality. I almost manufactured it just to get out of it, because it was one of those things. It was a starving without. I was perfectly willing to keep on teaching the Sunday class for the young men. I think that was fine. It was the activities, because they weren't activities anymore. They were all of us having to do an obligation. And you go, wait a minute, Wednesdays are supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be a wonderful time to get together and have good activities. And you're going, if it's not that, don't do it. It's like Scouts. Scouts is supposed to be fun. If it's becoming just kind of a forced death march for everybody involved with it, if it becomes starvation, then it's not serving anybody's needs. I guess it's supposed to make us look good. You know, boy, I got my Eagle Scout. You know, and you need to go out and have fun with other kids. And you go, okay, which other kids are we talking about? So it's not there. It just simply becomes a starvation as opposed to a fast. Okay, so I was thinking just this morning, as Lisa and I were talking about housing. It comes up a lot because housing is rather expensive. It's a big line item. I've always been the kind of person that I thought housing was something that could be affected. You know, you could adjust your living, your lifestyle, to reduce the amount of money needed to pay for that stuff. And I said, you know what, the sacrifice of, well, I before I got to the whole to the whole fast versus starvation thing, you know, I am a person, and I know it's annoying and it's hard because people are very superficial, and I know people say, well, that's a really mean thing to say, and you go, no, it's just honest. It's not meant to have an evil connotation. If you're evil, everybody's evil, because to a certain degree, we're all superficial. I'm weird because I'm deep, so if anybody's weird here, it's me, okay? Everybody looks to superficial things, you know, well, we can't do this because of this, we can't do this because of that. You know, most people don't like to sacrifice, and that's fine. You know, that's understandable. But oftentimes, sacrifice is needed to get something better. Americans have a real problem. That's where our credit card debt problems, that's where, you know, those kinds of problems come from, is from our need never to sacrifice. We would much rather push off suffering into the future for the hope that we can have a little bit of happiness now, which is wrong, and it never works, because later on, your capacity to handle might be less. As we grow older, we need to have better circumstances so that we can deal with the fact that our bodies are falling apart and that, you know, and that we can't do what we used to do. If there's any sacrificing needed to be done, we need to sacrifice while we're young and energetic, not get ourselves into a horrible strait, hoping that when we're 60 or 70, we're going to have the resources to be able to handle our excitement when we were young. That's part of the philosophy of fasting, is putting off pleasure today so that you might have better things tomorrow. That's almost the whole thing about Earth life. You're going to go through some problems now, but if you weather them well, if you're smart and if you're cagey, well, whatever. If you weather them well, you will be, you know, you'll be in better shape in the future after you die, you know. It's not pleasurable to keep all the commandments sometimes, but it may be a sacrifice. It may be a sacrifice now that leads to something better later on. Anyway, so, that's another thing. See how all this stuff kind of gels together a little bit? Okay. So, we were talking about that because I think Lisa's got some real deep set, and everybody does. I'm not saying that's specific to her. She's just the example. Deep set pain, deep set fear. I know a whole lot of the future is fearful for my wife. She has pain. She has back pain a lot. She has headaches. She snaps a lot at the kids. You know? She yells at them a lot. Especially the twins, because they're energetic, they're always in her face, they're always buzzing around her, wanting this or that or this or that. And so she's constantly swatting at them, you know. And I'm saying, you know, a person that had less headaches in her life might be able to handle the twins better. So the twins didn't think, and I think to some degree the twins do, have kind of a love-hate relationship with their mother. They, I'm sure half the time, they think their mother hates them or doesn't like them, doesn't like what they are. And yet they come, they snuggle with her, because who else are they going to snuggle with? You know, very few other people will have them. So that's kind of the issue there. I just forgot to draw here. Yeah, okay. Now, I was talking about that. I said, you know what? I said, we need to address deeper problems. I said, and housing ends up being just one of those constant, just kind of dragging down things. You know, I'll tell you our situation frankly. I said, we can afford to make the payments on our house. But we cannot afford to do basic maintenance, much less make improvements. That's our situation. It has consistently been our situation, to my frustration. Every time I talked about it, I typically allowed myself to be overruled because my wife was wanting to, Lisa was wanting to get... to get these things, you know. This was her picture of what would bring her happiness. And so far, I'll tell you, it hasn't. Now, our other problem is, now, anytime I feel this way, of course, I change jobs. And people get upset at me. Joey, Jay, you change jobs a lot. And you go, it's because I have to. I've got to make more money because we can't keep living like this. You know, our house is slowly starting to just degrade. Because we can't do but the very basic things just to keep it going. You know, my basic improvement to the house is to rip out excess crap and to just live with, you know, we tore out destroyed carpeting in the boys' room and we painted their floor. Now, a lot of people would say, ooh, that's real tacky and, you know, that's going to reduce the value of your house. You go, yeah, but it's what we can do to make it better and to make it livable for us. And the problem is we make it more livable for us, given the kind of resources we have, it becomes less saleable. You can't get rid of it. You know, people will say, well, I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to buy a house like this, and I'm not interested in going through that. And so Lisa gets really depressed and really sad about that. And what happens to our house is it's a millstone around our neck. It's something that we can't afford. Now, Lisa likes our job. She also was very paranoid and weird about the fact that I would have to change jobs, and sometimes I would have to take a job that didn't make as much money. I don't tend to now because I haven't had the need to be separate. I've never been fired from a job. But I have had to change jobs for various reasons. You know, usually because the traveling was too much, or like out on the boat, although it provided us with lots of money and a lot of improvements that our house needed, got accomplished while I was on the boat. Because number one, it gave me time, and number two, it gave me resources that I still don't have. I do not yet have as much take-home pay as that job gave me. Oh. And I'm to my destination, which means I need to stop, and I haven't really gotten to the point. Gracious. This is a two-parter. Jay and Emerald, we're going to do about fasting. In fact, we didn't even really get to much about fasting versus starving. We started. We're still getting there. I'm still doing the run-up to it. Because these things are difficult. These are hard concepts. This is why I would never work on radio, because I can't do sound bites, because I'm more philosophical, and these things take a long time. You have to drag people to where you are. And I'm not sure I ever have. I found this morning that I had drugged Lisa that far. She was still fighting for little scraps here and there that she wanted. You know, she was still having a conflict with me. And I think I finally got to the point to where I'm trying to solve really big systemic problems. You're just trying to, you know, I was talking about living in a cesspool, and you were trying to pick what scent of air freshener you were spraying all over our part of the cesspool, you know. And I was and what I'm trying to do is get us out of the cesspool, and she's saying, no, we can't afford that, because I've got to buy air freshener. And you go, I'm trying to solve the problem. I'm not trying to make the problem more palatable. That's a good analogy. I need to hang on to that. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. This is going to be a two-parter. We're going to do the next part, hopefully next time. We'll see if I get to it. This has been episode 582, part one of Fast versus Starvation. This is Jay Nemro. Have a great day.